he's just hopelessly confused, isn't he, about what Bitcoin is, how it works. There's so many mistakes in what he's talking about. It's hard to know where to start.
You are never going to read the 10K of every company in the S&P 500 and understand the ins and outs, much less understand the back office manipulation that goes on.
As this whole thing collapses, time is short to be able to avoid the wreckage. You know, get into Bitcoin and opt out of the system because we know they're not going to pay it off.
There's nothing you can do about this club, really. I mean, other than one thing is stop funding it with your time and energy. Opt out, you know, defund them. Every second you spend in the legacy world keeps it relevant.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Greer and Tony as always, and some of you will remember our dear friend Rick Messett. Rick, it's good to have you back, brother. Let's jump into the news. So the top piece of news this week that I think I've seen is this: Tucker Carlson says he's a hard no on Bitcoin, claiming he thinks it was created by the CIA and calling himself more of a gold person. And he goes on and sort of elaborates on this, but for a variety of reasons, as we can all imagine, Bitcoiners are now kind of dunking on Tucker Carlson. Rick, it's been a while, so I'm going to let you take this one first, man. What's your response to Tucker here?
He's just hopelessly confused, isn't he, about what Bitcoin is, how it works. There's so many mistakes in what he's talking about. It's hard to know where to start. I made a couple of notes. You know, he said at one point he thinks it's run by a coalition of financial beneficiaries and politicians. So he clearly doesn't understand that nobody controls Bitcoin and nobody runs it. He's constantly conflating Bitcoin and crypto as well. So, I mean, I don't know what to say apart from imagine a guy who got the opportunity to interview Michael Saylor and still cannot get his head around what Bitcoin is. And it's funny as well, you know, he says, oh, look, you know, I'm more into gold and I've been vindicated by my interest in gold. And he's obviously talking about the fact that gold has pumped recently. But that's such a short term mindset, right? Because, OK, yeah, Bitcoin, gold has outperformed Bitcoin briefly this year. I think it's up, you know, 50 odd percent compared to Bitcoin's 13 or something in that region. But if you zoom out over the last 5 years, Bitcoin's up like 800% and gold is up 125%. So, you know, he clearly doesn't understand the fact that it really doesn't matter who Satoshi is. It's open source code. We can all verify it. We can all validate that nobody's in control. So whether it was Satoshi or my grandma who made Bitcoin is irrelevant at this point. So I don't know what to say other than, I mean, these are the guys that get invited to the Bitcoin conference to speak about it, right? But they haven't even sat down and put more than a handful of hours into studying it. So my bigger concern with this is that, you know, I quite like Tucker, right? Like I like his views on quite a few different things. But the problem is when he's up on stage talking to people and mentioning these things, he's actually pushing people away from the solution that might well save them from what's coming. And I think that's a bit tragic. So hopefully he figures it out sooner rather than later and can get back on stage and correct himself. But time will tell. And he will learn the hard way if he doesn't learn the right way. So we'll see.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Like, I think a lot of things Tucker says, I agree with the words he is saying. These sorts of moments make me skeptical of him and what incentives are at play, because I just feel like if you don't understand, it's one thing to say, you know, I'm unsold on Bitcoin yet. I just haven't done the research, because someone this smart spends 10 hours, he'd figure it out. And the fact that he's speaking on it, you know, and sort of elaborating to me is like sort of, you know, a reason to pause and maybe question any motivation behind that. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, man, I echo that sentiment. I find it a little hard to believe that someone with his platform and, you know, his background and his career would, you know, willingly come up on stage and say something so moronic to so many people. It makes you wonder if he's really that stupid or if he was put in a position to be that stupid because of, you know, of a something that we don't know about. If that's the case, well, you know, that'll unfold at some point. If that's not a case, that's really pathetic, considering he spent an hour and a half with Michael Saylor, who explained it all to him. I mean, like he spoon-fed him the ABCs, and he still doesn't get it. If he's worried about who invented it and the fact that he doesn't know who it is, well, then, I mean, does he not use the internet, electricity, fire, the toothbrush, a hammer? I mean, does he know who invented all of these things as well? Or does he just not use them either? There's a lot of, you know, question marks around this this post. But, I mean, I've learned to understand these days that you don't always take things at face value. There's a lot of things that seem to be one thing but are actually something else. If this was like, if you were conspiratorial, it would make sense to you to believe that he would be paid or put in a position to spew this rubbish, considering how big of a reach he gets to when he goes on stage and makes these presentations. So take it with a grain of salt, man. The truth will come out eventually.
Greer, what do you think?
If the CIA did create Bitcoin, it would be the first time that a government developed something that was innovative, ingenious, and overall a benefit to humanity. So it doesn't pass the smell test for me. I think the takeaway is don't let anyone lie to you about Bitcoin. You know, not everyone can bat 1,000. I also like Tucker. I think he says a lot of good things. But this is something that you have to uncover for yourself. So if you're going to just let someone who's very popular and influential tell you what to think, then you've got another problem as well.
Yeah. And not to get conspiratorial, but like this would be the perfect, like, for them to have someone like this who's saying all of like the contrarian things, but then to be wrong about Bitcoin, it frames it in such a way that he seems very trustworthy because of all of these other things that he says that you're not allowed to say or historically haven't been allowed to say. But then it kind of guides people on this path to gold, silver, not Bitcoin, anything that they can't control. You avoid it, right? So I don't know. We'll have to see if he evolves in his thinking or if he just, you know, stopped it an hour and a half with Saylor and that's going to be the end of his Bitcoin journey. Up next, guys, we've got Trump pardoning CZ, who literally ran a centralized casino. By the way, this is Lola Leitz. While Tornado Cash and Samurai devs continue to fight for their lives on the exact same charges for writing software. This world is a joke, she says. Tony, I think you would agree this world is a joke. What would you say to President Trump in this situation?
Well, and I wish I belonged to that 1% club, because this is clearly, confirmation that corruption at the highest level is, rampant and nobody cares. It's like it's so out there now that, it's like it's almost going to get normalized that this is, just how, these people do their things and there's nothing we can do about it. Seems to be the message that I'm getting, from all these news events that we keep on hearing, every once in a while. There's nothing you can do about this club, really. I mean, other than one thing is stop funding it with your time and energy. Opt out, defund them. Every second you spend in the legacy world keeps it relevant. Once you exit, you live into the future, adopt Bitcoin, live on a Bitcoin standard, they become weaker and weaker organically. And that's the only way to defeat this, really. I mean, you're not going to go to war with them, but you can certainly do your part to defund that cancer.
Yeah. Greer?
Yeah, you're not going to vote your way into a better society. And I think a lot of Trump supporters might not understand what happened here, but this looks like a pure pay-to-play scenario. And hearing Trump, it looks like he might not even known who CZ was, but although I find that hard to believe. And it brings up another name, Justin Sun, who was also a big donor and part of World Liberty Fi. And I think if you are out here, very obviously colluding in some way, it just doesn't put a great image on the president or what his plans are. So you can either opt out of the system by buying Bitcoin, or you can just choose to continue in futility. And I think, everybody, it's totally out in the open. Everyone sees what's happening here.
Yeah. Rick, you've been a passionate advocate for the Samurai devs over the last however long. It's been a while now. I can't even keep track. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, what can you say? The boys have summarized it quite well, right? It's a big club and you're not in it. So it's pay to play. If you can line Trump's pockets, then yeah, you might get a pardon for all sorts of things. I just hope that there is a silver lining here, which is, you know, as Lola points out, these are the same charges that the Samurai devs are facing. They did drop the anti-money laundering part of the case, but they're still going to be fighting against, they've pled guilty to money transmission and are facing 5 years. So, you know, the question's got to be, how can the Samurai devs go down for the same thing that CZ gets off the hook for, especially when the Samurai devs whirlpool meant that they couldn't be money transmitters, right? They never actually held the funds. So look, I don't love it, right? It's clearly corruption, but you know, maybe we'll get lucky and this will set a precedent that gets the Samurai devs back on our team, because man, those guys really worked hard to push Bitcoin forward, and I'd love to see them get free again, and who knows what they'd build next. You know, they're important people that could help push us forward again. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, this seems like a big missed opportunity to me. That, like, okay, who are all of the people who are part of Operation Chokepoint 2.0 who are still being persecuted? Let's just blanket pardon anyone who was writing software and let him go. So we'll see what happens, but I'm still hopeful that maybe at some point he wakes up to this. You know, David Bailey, someone like that, wake up, who, you know, has the president's ear on some level. Like, let's talk about some of these other people who deserve to be free. Okay, guys, speaking of, it's a big club and you aren't in it. So Kristen Shaughnessy says that there's this article entitled "Wall Street Giants Sued Over Alleged Stock Manipulation." And this is not being covered in the financial media at all. It's only found behind a paywall. I went in, looked for it, and it's Law 360, one of Bloomberg's subsidiaries. And it's the all you can see is an investor in Israeli chipmaker, Eltech, has sued Morgan Stanley and IBG, alleging they had a role in a complex stock price manipulation scheme. So for those of you who are invested in the stock market and you think that you're winning, you're probably not. You're probably matching inflation best case. And the best part, the real cherry on top, is that at any point in time, someone can manipulate stock prices for their own benefit, and you might just get screwed. Greer, you want to take this one first?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all feel like the stock market might be manipulated, or the Bitcoin market, the Bitcoin price might be manipulated. And I think the evidence here says that there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And if you're a Bitcoin pleb like me, you know, there's no way that you can get a fair shake at this. The players are just too big and powerful. The only thing that I find comfort in is that I can exchange any fiat I have for Bitcoin, and I can grow my wealth over time. So, you know, these games don't affect me the way that they would affect someone else who has been putting money into their 401k, saving diligently, but really not understanding what they hold and the opportunity that's before them. So if you don't like manipulation, I think the best thing to do is to stack sats as often as you can with whatever money that you're able to find or generate.
Yeah, the beauty of Bitcoin is that you can spend a bit of time and learn a lot about it. You are never going to read the 10K of every company in the S&P 500 and understand the ins and outs, much less understand the back office manipulation that goes on. And I think for me, that's what gives me peace of mind about Bitcoin, is I've studied it enough that I understand it enough that I can buy it, take self-custody, and not think about it anymore. Tony.
Yeah, exactly, man. This is a rigged casino like no other. So unless you're one of these sophisticated investors, aka insiders, who has, you know, information or connections to the right people, you're gonna get a chance to lose your money very quickly. It's been heavily manipulated since the beginning of time. This isn't new. This investor probably lost a lot of money and he's upset about it, which is why he's taken the gung-ho approach of trying to sue them. Good luck with that. Let's see how that plays out. But yeah, like you guys mentioned, for regular folks, this is not your playground. Learn how to use Bitcoin, hold it in self-custody. The wins will come exponentially larger than anything this circus can possibly offer.
Yes. Rick, what would you add?
Just that, I mean, it's tragic, isn't it? You know, they you can't save in dollars anymore because they print out thin air and create loads of it. So you try and escape and you try and speculate, because you can't hold dollars, but then you just get funneled into a casino where they rip you off as well. So, it's almost impossible to make money within the fiat system because it's a big rigged game. And the one thing I would add is when you see this going on, do you really want to go and put all of your money into Bitcoin treasury company stocks? It's not for me.
Well, hey, we've already seen a lot of that. You look at those charts, like the pump after the early investors got in, and then the absolute dump that we've seen. I think KindlyMD Naka is trading at below $1 a share right now. I mean, it's just they have gotten absolutely wrecked. Now, I'm always cautious to say we'll see what happens over the next 5 years. You know, like we have to also lower our time preference and, you know, keep an eye out for what could happen and not focus so much on short-term price action. But there are already a lot of people who bought in at $15, $20, $23 a share for that particular company and have just gotten slaughtered. And they thought that they were FOMOing in for something that was going to be this long-term hold. And now they're wondering if it's going to play out. And there's no way for any of us to know. Like, it's pure speculation. And that's exactly what the stock market is. Bitcoin is a savings vehicle that no one controls. Just buy Bitcoin, take self-custody. That's my advice. Not financial advice, though. All right, speaking of printing more money, so the U.S. national debt, Rick, has hit $38 trillion. This is Adam Livingston, and he obviously goes on this long meandering tweet about a million other things. But Rick, $38 trillion, looking from across the pond, what are you thinking about your American brethren?
Oh, it's bonkers, isn't it? You know, if you were to spend $1 million a day, it would take you 104,000 years to spend $38 trillion, right? Which means you would have had to started 100,000 years before Jesus showed up, back when woolly mammoths were cruising around the earth, right? Which means this debt pile, right, it isn't the elephant in the room. It's a big hairy elephant with big bloody tusks in the room. Like, this giant Ponzi is going to blow up. I mean, you know, look, we talk about the debt all the time, but it's got to the point now where it's just laughable. You know, the interest payments on this debt are going to soon outstrip what you spend on the military, what you spend on education, what you spend on welfare. You can't taper a Ponzi. So yes, $38 trillion today, maybe $39 next week. And before you know it, they'll be adding $1 trillion a day. So strap in, folks. We're going full Weimar.
Greer, I think you said offline that the inflation print was just announced this morning, maybe, 3%? So you think that's going to give them cover to lower interest rates, spend more, do all of the usual?
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, absolutely. I think the money printer is doing push-ups right now, getting warmed up for next week. So, and later this month, I think that we're going to see lots of printing. And just like Rick said, you know, the effect here is that, yes, there's more liquidity in the market, but all the prices go up. So there's no way out of this. You know, $38 trillion is going to be $40 trillion. It's going to be $60 trillion. And I think our Congress in the United States looks at this debt in some way as a symbol of our wealth, which is totally upside down. You know, debt is not wealth. Debt is slavery. Will they ever figure out Bitcoin? You know, maybe they're buying it through some proxy and we don't know about it, like MSTR. But I think that, you know, as this whole thing collapses, the time is short to be able to avoid the wreckage. You know, get into Bitcoin and opt out of the system, because we know they're not going to pay it off. And if they paid back every cent that they owed, that means that there is that much less money in the world. So they don't have the interest in paying off the debt.
Yeah. If for context, I think I did a presentation a few weeks ago for a bunch of normies trying to introduce them to like the problem that we have. And the chart I pulled only went to 2020. I think the U.S. national debt in 2020 was about $23 trillion. So if you were now at $38 trillion 5 years later, like we're approaching doubling the national debt from just 5 years ago. Like it's coming, and it's going to happen faster than the next 5 years. So yeah, buckle your seatbelts, everyone. It's going to get crazy. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, your Lebanon moment is here, guys. And I mean, the sad part is that most folks aren't even aware. They know things are bad. I mean, I know they're struggling, but they have no idea that they're about to get hit with a freight train, you know, very, very soon. And this is what you have to prepare for, because, you know, when that takes place, you're going to have to, I guess, play defense or support to a lot of folks that, one, you probably didn't even know, or two, that you're going to get to know whether you like it or not. This is insane. I mean, this is a ticking time bomb like no one's ever seen before. So, and the problem is normies have no idea. Like, I mean, they're not in here listening to these messages. They're out there running around in circles, not knowing, you know, what's up and what's from down. So brace yourself. This is definitely not good. Very, very like loud alarm bells are going off in my head now.
And Tony, I think the most concerning thing is that the dollar is the strongest and likely the last fiat currency to fall because of its global demand. Lebanon is a much smaller, more localized currency. So if this is the U.S. fiscal situation, what does that say about, you know, 150 other countries? And then we work our way up toward the G7s and the Australian dollar and the the British pound. Like we've got some dominoes to fall before this is even the biggest problem. And I think people are going to feel that pain very acutely here in the coming years is my concern. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but it's going to be messy.
Think of it as like a nuke that once it goes off, it's going to have a massive ripple effect. That's going to take everything out in its path. I think that's the best way to describe, you know, what's coming.
Yeah, I completely agree. All righty, guys, we're going to finish off with this one. It would not be a Bitcoin banter with Rick here if we didn't dunk on Peter Schiff. So Peter Schiff announced he's going to be launching a tokenized gold product. Sounds to me a little bit like a gold-backed dollar, which I think we've seen fail before. But, you know, obviously he said you'll be able to buy gold on an app through your phone. The gold will be stored in a vault. I'd be curious to know whose vault and who we're trusting exactly. And then you will be able to effortlessly transfer ownership of gold to people you know or redeem it for physical gold. This guy is, I mean, I just can't even believe that this is an actual clip and conversation that he's sharing with the world. Greer, why don't you take this one, man?
Yeah, is Peter going into China and all of the other gold-rich countries to try to get them to use his new token app? You know, I don't see that happening. And you highlighted it perfectly. You know, a gold token is reliant on trust, counterparty risk. I personally think that Peter Schiff is a closet Bitcoiner. I think he's been buying Bitcoin for a long time, but I think that he uses gold as a way to drive engagement online and drive people into his brand. And, you know, we laugh at him, but I think at the end of the day, we're going to find out that, you know, gold was just a side project for him and he really just did it for the clicks.
Yeah. Tony.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. But, you know, in the meantime, regular folks, you know, get screwed in all of this. And so if for those not paying attention, stay away from, you know, these lies and these gimmicks. These are all distractions that keep you from the one thing you should be focused on, and that's incorruptible money in your possession. Go grab a book, learn about Bitcoin, learn 7-8 new steps, hold it yourself, and ignore all of this noise. It's complete waste of time and complete rubbish.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to the Tucker story. It's like people who have these positions, like a platform where lots of people are listening, paying attention, investing, saving according to their guidance. Like, I think Greer's right. I think I actually met Peter Schiff at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas this year. And he told me I asked him what kind of hardware wallet he used, you know, joking with him, because I was under the assumption he probably owns Bitcoin. And he said he has a Trezor. I advised against that. But he went on to say that, like, he had like 0.1 BTC that Bitcoiners had very foolishly sent him as part of their like effort to help him build his reserve. But like the fact that he's showing up at those events to me is an indication he understands something. I know he's a troll. I understand it. He probably makes a ton of money on posting on X and getting engagement from Bitcoiners. Like we're fueling the fire to some degree. But the disservice from these people who are too smart to not spend the time to understand Bitcoin is just, it's beyond me. I can't imagine spending my days doing that. Rick, I'll let you close this one out, man.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head straight away, Michael, when you said, look, we've tried this before. There's a reason that we started using paper money, and that's because gold is hard to transact with. You know, you'd have to melt it down to give someone change. It's difficult to transport around. It's heavy. So that's why we created paper money, right? Receipts for gold. And he's essentially doing the same thing, but with digital receipts. But it has all the same problems, right? It's going to lead to fractional reserve banking again, because, well, Peter can start issuing more tokens than he has gold to back it up. You expose yourself to counterparty risk again, right? Because you're now trusting Peter Schiff to look after all your wealth, which, I mean, seems like an okay guy, a little bit misguided, but I'm not giving him any of my money. And then the third question is, you know, how do you audit this, right? How do I even know that Peter's got the gold? I mean, famously, Elon was going to go and audit Fort Knox, wasn't he? But that never happened, because I don't know about you boys, but I'm fairly sure that Fort Knox might not have as much gold in as they say. So look, at the end of the day, all of this just leads to another trust me, bro situation. And if I've learned anything over the years, it's that trust me, bro situations are best avoided, because eventually someone's going to break that trust. So look, gold has failed as money. And I think if you bet on that now, I think you might be in for a bit of a nasty surprise, because once the world really truly understands that Bitcoin is the future of money, what it will do to gold is it will demonetize it, right? Gold will still have value because of electronics and nice jewelry and all that sort of thing. But Bitcoin will eat its monetary premium. And, you know, that's going to be a big turnaround. What's gold's market cap? Like close to 30 trillion now? You know, that's a lot of wealth that could flow out of gold and towards Bitcoin. So you might be left holding a very heavy and a very pretty bag, but you will be left holding the bag. So yeah, I would bet on Bitcoin before gold. And I'm not going to touch anything that Peter Schiff is shilling, that's for sure.
I think the last risk that we didn't highlight is, where is like the ledger, the database, where is any of that being hosted? Amazon Web Servers? Like, you know, like is that the play here? And so we have another outage like we saw last week, or maybe it was earlier this week, where tons of apps were down. So like, what, now you don't have access to your money? You can't send it. You can't transact with value. So it's just so many holes we could poke into this. But it's always fun to laugh at Peter. Rick, thanks for joining, man. Hey, why don't you tell people real quickly about the project you're working on, and then we'll hop off here.
Oh, sure, yeah. Basically, me and my dad, we were working on a project when we got hacked a couple of years back, and we finally finished it. Basically, we've built a provably fair Bitcoin lottery. The very short version of that is, traditional lotteries rely on trust, right? You have to trust that the bull machine wasn't tampered with or the bulls weren't weighted. So we realized, you could use something better. You could use Bitcoin's blockchain to randomly select winners in a lottery, because nobody can predict the hash of a future block, but everybody can verify it. So we think it could be a cool tool to orange pill people, because they might want to play it. We think it could be a great way to raise money for good causes. And, you know, Bitcoin fixes this. Well, let's take that to its logical conclusion. And we did it mainly because Bitcoin's awesome, because you can just do things, man. So we went off and we did something. So yeah, watch this space and we'll try and do something interesting with it.
Awesome, man. Where can people find out more about that?
Probably the best place at the moment. Like, we don't have a website to promote it. We just run them like little pop-up lotteries all over the shop. But if you follow me on Twitter, I'm building in public, right? So you'll get to see everything that we get up to. And you might get to play a Bitcoin lottery sometime soon.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming back, Rick. We'll have you again soon. And Greer, Tony, great chatting. For everyone tuning in, thank you so much. We appreciate you being here. Stick around for another minute and hear a little bit about the Bitcoin way, how we can help you take self-custody, do all the things related to your self-sovereignty. So important today. Gents, good chatting. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, Michael.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.